When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Good Omens Season 2, Episode 5, The Ball is over, but we are just getting started over here at Post Show Recaps. Welcome back, my friends. It is I, Rich Filiberto, DM Philly out here on the internet, and I'm delighted to be back with you this week talking Good Omens. I, of course, am not alone. I am joined by a woman who makes every Shopkeepers Association meeting look like a Jane Austen ball. Grace Leader. Grace, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Best I can offer you is 100 demons. Oh, 70 demons. Just went down in price.
I'll take it. I'll take okay, 70 demons. I'll take three quarters of a legion, three quarters of 170 of a legion of demons. I will take them. Fortunately for us, Grace, we are not alone. We are joined by a woman who could always spot a legion of mass demons walking down the street. Taylor Ball. Taylor, how are you? There's 70 demons here with us.
Hi, yeah. I'm so observant. I can definitely tell when there are demons walking around with masks. It's easy.
Three
honestly.
Quarters of 175th of one legion of demons walking down the
easily
street.
Easily spotted.
Taylor, episode 5, The Ball, your namesake. How did you feel about it? What'd you think?
This was my favorite episode of the season. Like, there was something about it from start to finish that I loved. I took the most notes on it. Big fan.
I am excited. We got a little Jane Austen departure. I loved the whimsy of it. It was peak whimsy this week. It felt like, Grace. What'd you think about episode 5 of season 2?
Yeah, it was fun. Xerophel's giving away books like they're nothing just to make sure that Nina and Maggie both can be at the Shop Traders Association meeting. As somebody who loves French culture, I very much appreciated Aziraphale's poor French. I felt the bond there as he's like trying to speak French. I did like this episode a lot. I thought the sort of juxtaposition of everything that's happening inside the bookshop and everything that's happening outside the bookshop, Aziraphale being so focused on the ball while Crowley realizes there's immediate danger outside, very, very fun. And who doesn't love an episode where these two, Michael Sheen and David Tennant, dance together?
Mm-hmm. Magnificent. We got a callback on how many angels can dance on a pin, and it is just one, because Aziraphale is the only one that knows how to dance. I really loved it. The Doctor Who winks and nods were very strong. I apologize to all the Whovians out there that we do not have any Doctor Who Jason hosts on the podcast, but it was a delightful episode. I very much enjoyed episode 5. Let me give a short, long recap here, and we can dig into the episode proper. Aziraphale prepares the bookstore for the monthly Wickaber Street Shopkeepers Association meeting. Reluctant to attend, many of the local merchants are bribed with the offer of free books. Shax assembles her legion of demons to attack the shop, though Furfur only gives her 100 of the 10,000 she requested, and she gathers them to rally the troops. Nina agrees to attend the meeting to speak her piece about the audacity of the Christmas lighting in the area, and she asks Crowley about his relationship with the Aziraphale. Crowley fervently argues that the pair are not involved that way, and she relates that love is complicated just before her partner Lindsay dumps her via text. Crowley, meanwhile, returns to the shop where he takes out his frustrations on Jim. He explains how badly he treated his only friend, and Jim is frustratingly sympathetic about the whole affair. Crowley just cannot bear to have him throw himself out the window. In the bookshop, which is now a ballroom, the meeting begins in earnest as the patrons arrive. Crowley approaches the shop and he realizes that 175th of a Legion of Demons are here as well. He uses his bureaucratic acumen to mislead Shax and slow their assault, but Jim realizes that they are here for him and heads right outside to release himself. No one believes that he's Gabriel, however, so Shax drives her forces onwards to the attack. Crowley leads the patrons to safety while Maggie and Nina stay to aid Aziraphale in defending the shop. And Crowley runs into Muriel and reveals that somehow he has seen through her clever disguise, at which point he directs her in precisely how to arrest him and escort him back to heaven. Taylor, where do you want to start? There was so much good stuff this episode. Like I said, I felt like it was really just peak whimsy. This whole Jane Austen ball of it all, the Mrs. Sandwich seamstress bit almost destroyed me. What is the most interesting to you? What do you want to talk about?
Oh, gosh. We should just start at the beginning, right? Where I love this like kind of opening where number one, like right off the bat with all the Doctor Who references, as Aziraphale is kind of going around sort of trying to get everybody to come to this meeting. He's giving away books. He's enticing people. The 1965 Doctor Who annual that doesn't technically exist. Of course, Aziraphale has a copy of like the proof, which is just wonderful. We have David and a Fez, very classic Doctor Who. I thought that was just a wonderful start. And to pair that with the demons, I don't know if we've like talked about it specifically, but I really like the aesthetics of heaven and hell. I think we did like talk about it a little bit, but how hell is just so the old technology, like it is very cool. Like it really, I feel like, fits the theme. You know, hell is kind of stuck in these, like, you know, it's grimy, it's dirty, it's like hazy and foggy. There's these old machines. I thought the beginning was like, it was just such a great little with Crowley following Aziraphale around as he goes and like does his duties for the town and thinks he's like, you know, doing this really great. It's so cute. I do love
Crowley following Aziraphale around and just like filled with like not quite contempt, but almost like pity, some mixture of the two graces. He watches Aziraphale like fumble through life. The whole design aesthetic is tremendous too. Like the vibe with the angels and the white, the strange metallic makeup, and like the whole analog 70s technology, grimy green overlay of hell. It is an awesome vibe. It's a strong start. It's a really fun start to the episode, Grace, to get Crowley kind of watching Aziraphale doing his business, luring the patrons.
Yeah, I feel like very early on, as folks were chatting in our Posho Recaps patron Discord, you can become a member of patreon.com/PoshoRecaps. There was lots of talk about just how like alluring David Tennant plays Crowley, and then immediately I think we jumped into episodes with the minisodes where I'm like, these are not good looks for my bro Crowley. But here I feel like the script must have just been, can you just like be David Tennant, can you just do things? So he's like, yeah, I can do that. Like, no lines of dialogue, basically, until basically he asked him about, like, how come you don't know French? We know every language. And it turns out he had taken lessons in the 1700s. He had taken night classes, which is why his French is so poor. But basically, the whole time, it's just him, like, in the background, watching Aziraphale do his thing. And I like this because what it's very subtle in the sense that David Tennant is basically not saying a single word this whole time, but he's watching most of the time. I said this, that most of the times when the two of them are in trouble, it's Crowley who does something and it seems devious, but then you realize like it's not as devious as it seems when he gets Aziraphale out of trouble. In this instant, really, if you think about what Aziraphale is trying to do here, which is trying to get people to come to the tenant meeting so he can get Nina and Maggie to realize they're in love to cover up the fact that they are hiding a miracle from heaven, in Aziraphale's sense, right? So he's kind of doing something bad, but like morally good because it's like covering up for Jim, right? So I kind of love that like Crowley is not taking charge here. It's almost like after years and years of Crowley being the one doing all the scheming, Aziraphale's kind of learning, and it's ultimately like willing to give up his books, the thing that we know he loves more than anything. When he calls Crowley about watching over the books, he's like, please tell me you're not giving away any of my books, right? There's a thing he loves most, but he's willing to do it in the pursuit of goodness, but it's also a bit devious, right? Like he's trying to do a good thing by like making sure Jim is protected, Gabriel is protected, but he's also doing it because he's trying to figure out how to cover up for the lie that they told about which miracle they did. So I think it's just like there's a lot there actually in the beginning that I think is plays into the themes of the larger show.
Yeah, it really does. It's just banging so hard on the drums of the themes of the show, to your point, Grace, this whole notion of him where the ends justify the means fundamentally is where Aziraphale's come to, that because this is the right thing to do and because it's not fundamentally going to harm anybody, it's going to be okay for him to use these false tactics. I think, Taylor, when you hear actors talk about like playing these roles again and again and again, you hear this theme of like they enjoy so much getting to play a villain and getting to play a character that has something to chew on and gets to maybe twirl their mustache a little bit. And I would say overwhelmingly that Tennant as Crowley, especially across season one, just has the bigger part. He is so much more bombastic just by nature of the character. He gets to be larger than life in a lot of ways, where Sheen has to like play down. He has to play this demure Aziraphale, right? And so much of the performance is like muted and about his restraint, like this restrained exuberance that he has. But I think more and more, the further we've gotten into season two, I'm seeing that balance shift, whereas Aziraphale is like dominating the season, to Grace's point, in screen time and dialogue, and Tennant is really in the background just doing vibes with Crowley, and God, I love it. He like captures and conveys so much, and like the physicality and the facial expressions, he just like has such swagger with this character. I think the kids call it Riz, Taylor.
The Riz. David Tennant definitely has Riz. But I love this. I love that sort of, yeah, Crowley and Aziraphale are this sort of, you know, dynamic duo that tends to balance each other out. So Crowley has been sort of like, you know, easing Aziraphale into, you know, curiosity, questioning like what he was a part of. And then they're sort of in this gray area where they have each other, and they're not really on anybody's side. And Aziraphale is giving Crowley is giving Aziraphale the space to take up more space and is like actively allowing that. And it's a beautiful thing to see in a like relationship, I think. But yeah. And then we like, speaking of relationship, we like, during this scene where they're walking around, we get Nina finally asking the question that we've all been waiting for somebody to ask. So you've been together long? Da, 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 finally. And Crowley's response to this, this episode, my heart was so full, this entire thing. But she's like, oh, is like he your bit on the side? Like, are you married? Yeah. And Crowley's like, he's far too pure of heart to be anybody's bit on the side. Like, oh my goodness. It's just so sweet. Crowley is so in love with Aziraphale. And it is like, so, you know, we talk about like Aziraphale's restraint. Like this is such a naive little angel. And Crowley is the one who is kind of like becoming more aware of the relationship that they have. And, you know, he has to like walk away. He's like, oh, shoot. Like these are thoughts that are happening. But I love that moment.
It's a fantastic reaction. It's so funny to like think, you know, because Aziraphale is incredibly naive and so many of the angels are, Grace. This is like the angle of humor that we play with them is their like absolute naivety. But dare we say like Aziraphale is the most worldly of the angels, right? In the fact that he is willing to lie. He knows how to manipulate these people. He is like of the world more so than anybody else. So it's this great juxtaposition. And I love the way that Crowley goes immediately from that scene with Nina back to Jim, where he's going to now unload all this baggage, right? And his anger is not about what Jim has done to him or being cast out of heaven. It is very much this defensive, protective energy of like, I was there. I saw you where in the last moments of my best friend, you wanted him to burn. You told him to shut up and die. And it's so palpable and powerful. And I love that we're calling back on these moments that closed out season one on this very important kind of deception that the two of them pulled off. But again, like John Hamm just like stealing the scenes here as he's climbing out the window. Jim's reaction of like, oh, I'm so sorry. I can't get enough of it, Grace.
Yeah, I didn't know, but I am sorry. It's very sweet. And yeah, Crowley like telling him to jump out the window, and then, you know, you kind of hopefully see that it's like, don't actually make him do that, you know, as much as he hates this guy. The angel, you know, how oblivious they can be to culture, I think, is especially funny when you think Muriel's going to go back and report in on the miracle and Gabriel, and you think that, uh-oh, they're going to learn that, like, Aziraphale lied about love miracles taking a few days, and she goes, as we all know, it takes a few days for them to fall in love, and Michael goes, yeah, I know that. Very funny. But yeah, I do, yeah, this is the sort of the most we get that's like blatantly, you know, I feel like there's been hints to it and allusions to it of like romantic interest between Aziraphale and Crowley, but this is the most on the nose we get. I definitely think that if I have a critique of the season thus far, I do think like everything other than Michael Sheen and David Tennant has been not as strong and as like sort of large as I think season one was, and how fun, you know, we talk about, I think Taylor, you talked about in the preview pod, recapping season one, of that idea of like magic being layered on the real world. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening other than these two demons, there's been very little of it. I also do wonder, I think season one was filmed in 2017, season two filmed in late 2021 into 2022. So I imagine they might've just been restricted by COVID restrictions in terms of having other, like it was just easier. And this really is like the meat and potatoes of this show. So I think it's like, it's working. And I actually think this stuff is like, is super, super strong. My only complaint is that like I feel like it's at the expense of everything else, which I don't know if I like yet or not. But it's really, really good. I mean, this Aziraphale Crowley stuff, the will they, won't they of their relationship is probably the best part of the show. So can I blame Neil Gaiman for being like, let's just focus in on that? Not really.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
There's been some conversation about the second book that was written, Taylor, and like the bones of the second book, at least, that Pratchett and Gaiman were going to follow up with. And this season being the bridge to kind of connect the end of the first story to the beginning of that second story. That's what I've heard a little bit. So I'm interested to see where we might go for a season three. But I'm with you, Grace, where I think that centrally, the story that's focused on the two of them has been the most compelling, and the peripheral stuff maybe not as much. I do have to say I really love the exploration of the angels. I like Michael and Uriel and Muriel and Sarah Quayle, I'm still saying it wrong, having like a bigger part this season. And that's been very fun, but it's very Drax the Destroyer, like blunt humor, right? Like that's the joy that I'm kind of extracting from it. So we get this whole like meeting, Taylor, in the bookshop that like evolves into this Jane Austen level ball for Project Lovebirds here to get Maggie and Nina together. Very notably also, we've been tracking, we're heavily indexed on Lindsay, the invisible girlfriend, and
yes,
break up via text message. So I know you want to stop in and talk
about that. I need to talk about this. So the board. Number one, I adore that Nina is this like secret like shipper of Crowley and Aziraphale, because there's like the little love heart on the board that says CNA, which I just love. It's so cute. But I'm not done with Lindsay. I don't care if like this is the breakup. I don't care. The messages were actually on the board. And I don't know if that's just like a clever thing that the show was doing for fun. They were actually on the board and Nina actually had to erase them. That is weird to me.
It's very weird.
That's weird. And I'm going to remember that. I'm not done with Lindsay. Lindsay is with her sister now. Who could the sister be? With what is happening here? Is it really just a toxic girlfriend or like, what is happening here? I want to know. I want to understand. I feel like there's more, and I don't think that we're done with Lindsay.
Yeah, because I took that as a an aesthetic choice, but they haven't really done that before with the text messages appearing on the chalkboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was very much stylized as the text messages were coming in to look that way, right? Like you could imagine it being written on a chalkboard, but it's a very bold choice, and I'm glad you caught it. I didn't necessarily, but it really, we shall see the relevance of Lindy going forward. I did think it was very funny of like, oh yeah, like as we're fixated on Lindsay Taylor, like it is just this quiet breakup via text message, and then we move right along. Like in a certain way, I think we all felt like Nina, you know? So a character that I've been loving that has emerged this season is like Miranda Richardson is Shax. Shax is like not playing a huge role, but she's just so much fun as this like sat upon like bureaucratic like mid-management level Grace demon trying to rally her legions. The whole bit of like, where's my 10,000 troops, and Furfur being like, yeah, here's 100, and then she burns up the one guy. Like Shax is like just delightful, and her arrival at the bookstore like killed me the whole bit.
I just to go back to when she burns up that one guy, actually, this to me was maybe the funniest part of the episode for me is the assembling of the Legion, just everything about this meeting. The mic is not, she can't get the mic up. It's like, so she's like bending down and demurring her status. The guy's like, I don't know, I think I gotta ask, like, we are not even close to being a Legion, you know? And then when she tells him to basically shut up and never ask any more questions, but he's like, so like, I you looking around to make sure, like, we're all feeling this, right? Should I just ask? And then he gets attacked. As somebody who has been in like meetings that has this type of energy. I will not quite say that my work is hell, but has similar energy. Very funny, this whole scene of like you've assembling the Legion.
Any of your coworkers spontaneously immolated for asking questions. No. What I really loved about it, Taylor, is like the parallel to Crowley, right? This guy asking questions, it's like, no, you just get burned up. Stop questioning the leadership. There's such a incredible manifestation of like mid-level bureaucracy and everything that's happening in hell, and that is so like tangibly off-putting to us culturally where we find ourselves. It's just it's a magnificent play, and Shax is like this character that I absolutely love and really hope we get more of if we return with the season 3 of Good Omens.
Yeah, Shax is wonderful. I just love her energy is so big, and she's clearly so ambitious, but is like, you know, speaking very dramatically to this basically like giant empty warehouse. And this guy, Demon Eric. So poor Eric gets just wiped out so many times for like being the Hermione Granger of this like demon, this class of demons, right? And the correcting the teacher is so funny. Actually the big like elevator like thing is broken, so we're gonna have to go single file, or we're gonna have to use stairs. Like, and then she decides to make them all use the stairs. But yeah, the entrance into London is so hilarious. The masks just absolutely killed me. I was like, oh cool, they're gonna have like demon masks. Like, this is just, like they're gonna have like, you know, these weird like creepy like, but no, they're just
they're just plain masks. Crowley managing Shax and the 75th of a Legion of Demons, Grace, it just gets me so good as he plays them with the bluff and like the idea that Shax is like, oh well, he probably does know and I don't know, and like playing with this energy of like what you don't know and you know what you don't know to an extent but you don't, and like I just loved it the way he stops them dead as he starts like just shooting all this bureaucratic legalese jargon at them of like, nope, we got to evacuate, da, 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 da. We got to get the humans out of here. I love the play. It was great.
Yeah, the some of the rules don't, for me, they it's like they play a little loosey-goosey with the rules of like, you can't cross into the, what's he, because they ask what's the barrier, the one guy who's like going to go up and like make us, and then like what's the barrier, and they say the door frame, and they grab him and pull him out. Like, isn't that though crossing the door? I guess if he's in the door frame it doesn't matter. But yeah, Crowley going on, and this is where I said like at the beginning of the episode, this is the type of thing that Crowley would typically do, and he does do it here at the end of the episode of coming up with this fake evacuation rule, civilian casualties, you have to give them time to leave. I do the Shax being wonderfully evil in terms of no, we're not going to kill the angel and the demon, we're going to kill all the civilians inside is pretty friggin' evil. So yeah, worked for me.
It's fantastic. Yeah. She's got such an awesome costume too, but the costuming that like really leaps out has got to be Jim in his waiter's attire.
Oh my gosh,
that's a lot of rhinestones going on.
Him going around
shade of blue.
Him going around Taylor being like, look, I'm not offering you a book. I'm offering you little food for free. It's so good.
I'm not selling them to you.
I'm not selling them.
The suit is everything. It's just absolutely everything. In the middle of this, Jane Austen, literally, they're doing the dance scene from Pride and Prejudice. So Pride and Prejudice is... somehow, some way, it has become one of my favorite like comfort movies. I know that movie, the 2005 version. I know it back to front. Like, it is one of my favorite things. And everybody who has seen that movie knows that the dancing scene is like one of the best moments. Like, the entire world melts away as I can't remember their names, Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy. There we go. I just had to take it again. But as they're dancing, the whole world melts away. It's beautiful. But here's Jim in the middle of everything. Everybody's talking like they have this old English. It's amazing. And here's Jim in the bright blue rhinestoned out suit. And it's incredible.
But more importantly, when he decides to go outside
and
sacrifice himself, he somehow has the world's most magnificent coat.
Yeah.
Where did you get really this? Incredible.
Where did that code come from? I'm so glad you flagged it, because it felt to me like, you know, the angelic wings are such an image, and we don't get a lot of that on Good Omens, but he comes out with this like incredible fur coat, you know, there's the Riz like in full effect. It just is like, it was so much like over the top, Grace, just larger than life.
It's so funny that he goes outside, and I kind of forgot, like the idea that they can't see him. I kind of thought this was just like angelic demon like ignorance, like this is the gift, but no, it's the miracle, it's the half miracle that they each perform. I kind of forgot. And so he goes outside and is like, so it's me, Jim, short for James, also short for Gabriel. And and they're like, no, go back inside, we want Michael and or Gabriel, sorry. And I do like Crowley being like, wow, our miracle worked way too well.
Also, yep. The little note that demons are terrible at spelling, like surrender, so the angle. Like...
You're all toast. T O S T E.
Toast. Incredible.
It really is such a nice touch, the bad spelling. Like, surrender the angle got me. The brick through the window of the bookshop. I love Gabriel surrendering himself, right? This whole, like, we've talked about the John Hammond, like, this himbo role, but there's such a childlike innocence to him, right? I think himbo
is
almost...
Well, how delighted is he when Crowley asked, do you want a hot chocolate?
Yeah. The way Crowley asks, do you want a hot chocolate? Like, so great. I love it.
There's just this incredible childlike innocence to him, this like euphoria, this glee that I think maps to like this angel that is like seeing the joys of the world for the first time, right? Has not necessarily been able to like perceive the earthly delights as anything more than less than in his mind for all eternity, ultimately, since the creation of it all, right? So the idea that he's like finding so much joy in these little things, there's something really powerful about that idea. Just I love when like this as a theme is presented to me in fiction as like a reminder of like, yo, the world's pretty awesome. Like, yeah, it's unrelenting, it's harrowing, people are tough, bad stuff's gonna happen to you tomorrow, but like just stop for a moment and enjoy like the sound of a song on the radio and appreciate like how magnificent it is. Enjoy that hot chocolate, because quite frankly, it's nothing like short of a miracle that that's a thing that we get to have in the various parts of the world that we find it. So Jim is like the avatar for you know, joy is like just working for me so well. I really dig it. The like Maggie and Nina kind of closure of it, of the two of them are going to decide to like hang back and help Aziraphale. They're going to defend the bookshop, this last defense of the place. Does this work for you, Grace, as like a narrative choice, or does it feel like to contrive that like, oh, these are the only important people in the meeting, we got to keep them here?
I mean, it's fine. Again, I do feel like Maggie and Nina has never like shifted into the next gear for me in a way that has really worked. But I do like this. I think we get a good line from Crowley as he's like, I'll take the front. Nina, can you take the back? And then when she's like, no, I'm going to stay here. He's like, okay, here to die and sacrifice yourself. Okay, cool. Okay, good. And then he like heads out. I thought it was fun. I really enjoyed a lot of the background actors. It does seem, can I just ask, did they just immediately, some new guy runs the magic shop, or is he always been the owner of the magic shop? And that the guy who died, just the guy who I guess, is that a mini-sode? That's from the past, I guess, right? That's
yeah, from the past. It was. Okay. That was from the past. Very notably, this is our first episode since two that we don't have any mini-sodes. But yeah, that was in the past, right? Because he was on the West End Theater, and so we're way back. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought they just like, how funny that this like a new guy comes in and like takes over the shop after the horrific murder of the previous magic shop owner. Nevertheless, yeah, I think this is fine. Maggie and Nina sticking around feels a little like we got to have them in this spot for the story to continue, but it's fine. It is what it is.
I love the eclectic assortment of shopkeepers here on Wickerbur Street, Taylor, that like it's the magic shop, it's the record shop, you know what I mean?
Oh, the seamstress. We haven't talked about the seamstress.
Oh my God.
The seamstress bit was too good. The seamstress bit.
Why can't I say it? Yeah.
It leveled me. I love the seamstress bit. Aziraphale asking, what exactly do they do? It's like so next level. Mrs. Sandwich, an absolute gem.
Yeah. Her description of when she can't say sandwich, or she can't say seamstress, sorry, of trying to explain what she does for a living was very good. You know, when a gentleman comes in and needs his buttons sewed back on? Yeah.
It's terrible.
Absolutely delectable. I love the vibes that we get, Taylor, too, between Nina and Crowley, right? I mean, I'm like kind of with Grace that I don't feel like these characters have activated in the same way like the kids did in season one. That became like a pretty compelling storyline to me in and of itself along the way. And so Nina and Maggie, I both feel like are maybe a little bit like undercooked as characters, like their archetype certainly, but Nina, the more compelling of the two, at least for me. And part of it is because of this relationship with Crowley and the pair of them like finding this familiarity, this bond of like these hard edge, sharp kind of people that still have needs that they're maybe not as willing to like put forth out there.
Yes. Yeah. I love the, I'll say I don't adore the Nina and Maggie stuff. I really like their relationship, but I feel like there's another shoe that needs to drop somewhere. And I'm starting to think that there's something up with Nina. Like, there's more than meets the eye with Nina. And just the way that these two are
clearly
handling,
she's been dating a demon for all season. And, you know,
for real, like, what is going on? But I don't know. I think it was sweet of them. I love Maggie's kind of earnestness and, you know, she's the Aziraphale in their relationship, right? She's the one that is going to like sacrifice everything, kind of going to try and stand up for what's right no matter what. And it's like paralleled in Aziraphale where, you know, he's so sworn to protect Gabriel, aka Jim, and it really has no reason to. Like, Gabriel was terrible to Aziraphale for most of his time as an angel in heaven. And I love that. I adore that sort of theme and character type, where, you know, regardless of what a person does, like, you know, they deserve to live and have a chance to live kind of thing.
Big Gollum vibes, right? Yes. I mean, like, we never know. This is like a great thing. I talk about it with Star Wars all the time about like the compassionate hero and why Luke Oh my God. I can't even believe that I said that. Why Luke Skywalker is a transcended hero in pop culture. It's because like the selflessness is a thing that we don't often see depicted, especially in like the large screen that way. You know, it's not inherently as compelling, but.
I haven't got really to make important. My point in a while.
Make your point.
The death of the anti-hero, in that it's, I don't think the anti-hero is the type of hero we are looking for. Although, you know, you could argue that David Tennant as Crowley is a little bit of, is certainly an anti-hero, but it's about, but I feel like it's so different because you think about the stuff with Job where he turned, like, he's going to kill all the children. And then it's like, oh, but actually he didn't turn them into, you know, like he turned them into lizards. He didn't kill them, you know, having this, like the soft goodness inside of Crowley is, I think, the thing that really resonates for me with Crowley, this thing. And then to have Aziraphale just be sort of this, like, you know, earnestly good character. I think that the last few years have been so not fun in the real world and in terms of the type of people who have been elevated into the public consciousness and stuff we find out about people that we lauded on pedestals. And so to have TV characters that there is, it's just about goodness, like, even, yeah, like I do like this whole thing, right, is like Crowley being like, heaven basically just isn't as good as you think it is, right? Like it is bad too. You know, it, there's a little bit of like look out for yourself energy, but it's not, it's like look out for people who you care about, you know. So I think this is really resonating with me, I think, especially in this era. Like, you know, this is not Ted Lasso, but it has some Ted Lasso energy in terms of, you know, goodness is good, is a quality that you can strive to be and should try to be as much as you can. Forgiveness and looking out for people and all of this stuff, do good when you can do it, right? I think is why this, for me, the show is like really hitting on all cylinders. Yeah.
A million percent. Yeah. Cosine. I mean, for me, I've talked a lot on a lot of podcasts about how my go-to for television watching is not to go put on Community. You know, I don't like rewatch comedies that I love. I grew up with like Seinfeld is a like treasured classic, but like, I'm going to go rewatch The Leftovers or Breaking Bad or, you know, The Sopranos and that era of Don Draper and Tony Soprano, and Walter White kind of like dominating the airwaves as these anti-heroes that we cleave to so closely in our fiction. It certainly seems to have ended. Like, I've made no bones about the fact that Good Omens over the past couple of weeks, as we've been talking about it, has been an injection of levity and of light and of positivity that I need in my life amidst some harrowing circumstances.
There's room for it. Like, Succession was just one of the biggest shows. Oh, you probably will clean up the Oscars whenever they happen.
I'll be super impressed if they manage to win Oscars, but they will steal all the awards from everybody. Yeah. There's no doubt. I mean, certainly you're right. Like, the catharsis of watching those types of stories is really powerful, but there's something to this, just like the euphoricness, right? I mean, especially like we close on like just the absolute whimsy again, as Crowley's like with Muriel Taylor, one of like these breakout characters for you, I know, of like the, oh, I got you, Inspector Constable. Oh my gosh. The whole, like, the joy of it all as this demon is manipulating an angel to get into heaven. This scene could be played so many different ways, but the tone of this, the exuberance of Crowley as he's like just effortlessly twisting this poor, pathetic, like naive angel around his
She's not face. Pathetic. Muriel's not pathetic. You take that back.
She's not. I do take it back. I just mean she never stood a chance at a duel of wits with Crowley here.
Taylor, of like, you're not manipulating me, are you? You're arresting me. How could I be doing that?
Yeah.
They're like, okay. And they get on the.
Well, and honestly, Crowley is so kind about this manipulation. Like, he does come out and say eventually, like, she's like, yeah, oh, I'm helping you. And he's like, yeah. And it's lovely. But yeah, you guys hit the nail on the head for a lot of this. I am one of these people. I am most people who are close to me know that I try my damnedest to lead with kindness, and sometimes that gets me into trouble because I just I can be very naive. I don't notice things that are right in front of my
There's
face.
There's demons out there.
Right, legions of them.
You gotta be careful. Yes, 75th of a legion.
I thought I was good at seeing them, but maybe I'm not as good as I think I was. But I just sometimes, like, especially when it comes to people I'm close to, I am so blind because I just want to see the best in people. Even my coworkers, like, just recently, like, a couple things have happened in my life where I'm like, how did I not see this right in front of me? And I don't mean to, like, come off as like this, you know, an angelic being or anything, but I try and have tried my whole life. My dad is very much like this force of positive and good in the world, and I've always tried to reflect that in everything that I do. But it very much is like you can get manipulated so easy, and sometimes things that are obvious to other people are just not obvious because you're just blinded, you're the rose-tinted glasses, right? And I see that so much in Aziraphale and Muriel. But the thing that I love so much about Aziraphale and Crowley's relationship is how accepting and loving that Crowley is of Aziraphale's tendencies. And there's an understanding, which I think is so, and Aziraphale gives it away. Aziraphale, there is this naivete to him, but at the end of this episode, but rescuing me makes him so happy, right? Aziraphale sees like what Crowley loves to do and understands that that's what makes Crowley happy. And they mesh together so well because of that understanding. And I think there's something that a lot of people can relate to. Like, everybody wants that person. Doesn't have to be romantic. It doesn't have to be anything at all. It just, there's somebody that understands how you tick and like, is actively like trying to make you happy. Mm-hmm. And there's something to that. And that's why this episode was one of my favorites, because there's something so human about these angels in wanting and finding this relationship amongst the chaos of the war between heaven and hell. And I think it's just, it's beautiful, this like relationship between the two.
Yeah, it's really good. Find you somebody who understands your needs, like Crowley understands Aziraphale, or Aziraphale understands Crowley. It is fundamentally really resonant, I think, to the human experience. This whole theme that we're talking about, Grace, of like the ends and the means and the way that it gets explored for light and dark, I think it really is encapsulated well in this episode in the context of like what we get, what Crowley's willing to do, what Aziraphale's willing to do, what Jim's even willing to do, you know, and like the intention that motivates decisions here. It was a really fun episode 5. I dug it. You got any final thoughts, Grace, before we return in a couple of days to talk about the finale?
One moment I really liked is, like, obviously we know Crowley and Aziraphale are friends, but two things that really highlighted is Crowley literally tells Jim, you tried to kill my only friend. Mm-hmm. And when Crowley is leaving with, he's evacuating all of the humans, civilians, he does say to Aziraphale, he says, I'm taking them away. I will be back. I'm not leaving you alone, which I really liked. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The small beats. Taylor, any final thoughts that you have before we part on episode 5?
I don't think so. I said my piece. This was my favorite episode because of so many of the like relationship dynamics. And Pride and Prejudice is wonderful. So I just loved seeing that. And the like very specific dance from the movie was delightful. This was a great episode.
A lot of great little beats. We will be back in a few days' time to talk through episode 6, the finale of season 2 of Good Omens. Until we are, Grace, where can people find you? What do you got going on?
I got lots. You've heard them on all the other podcasts, so I'll keep it brief, but I'm on socials at High From Grace or at Go For Grace.
And how about you, Taylor?
Yeah, I'm at Rania422 on most socials. I'm taking a break from streaming for the remainder of August. I have a few adult things to take care of. But I'll be back in September. So, but in the meantime, you know, VODs are on YouTube, et cetera, go check it out.
That sounded very convincing. A few adult human things to take care of, perfectly normal, perfectly average adult human things that need to be done.
Very Muriel. You are Muriel.
Yeah. I take back the pathetic comment. I am Rich Filiberto. I'm at DM Philly on the socials. Go hit me up. Talking about a bunch of stuff. Star Wars is coming. Wheel of Time's coming. The Winter King. There's going to be a bunch of podcasts out there. You can catch me tweeting them out over on Twitter. We will be back in a few days' time talking about episode 6. But until then, don't let the demons in the bookshop.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.